Have you ever met anyone who is famous or important or impressive? How did you respond when you met them? A few times Anita has taken our kids to see the Play School concert or to see Colin Buchanan live in concert. And the stories that she tells, it's amazing the way that kids respond at these concerts. Some of them are just bouncing off the wall. They are unstoppable. Others just stand there the whole time aghast. Others are terrified and they spend the whole time in their parents' lap crying because they're overwhelmed to see their heroes, maybe from TV, in the flesh in front of them. Or maybe they're just scared because they've seen someone who usually is just that big and inside a box. Well, they're life-size, aren't they? It's amazing. It can be overwhelming seeing someone famous or impressive. The same also for adults as well, isn't it? There's a classic scene in the movie Wayne's World. Wayne's World is a classic movie from the 80s. It's got Mike Myers in it. Garth and Wayne, they are the heroes of the movie. They go backstage during an Alice Cooper concert. And they have this extremely bizarre conversation with Alice Cooper, though I don't know what a normal conversation would be. And you can't even really call it a conversation because the whole way through it, Garth is just sitting there, just absolutely dumbstruck. And Wayne, however, he just tries to play it cool. Well, he plays it cool until the moment when Alice Cooper invites them to keep partying on with him. At which point, both Wayne and Garth fall on their faces before Alice Cooper, exclaiming, "We're not worthy! We're not worthy!" How do you respond in the presence of greatness? When you meet someone you greatly admire or a person with a lot of power and influence. Well, we're reading Luke's Gospel together this term, and as we've been reading Luke's Gospel, we've seen Jesus' greatness. Right at the beginning, Jesus' entrance was announced by angels. It wasn't just a little column in the newspaper, angels announced the coming of his baby. People were singing songs about him before he was even born. At the end of chapter 3, he was baptized by his cousin, John. And a voice from heaven said that Jesus is my beloved son, with you I am well pleased. And then Jesus begins preaching in the synagogue. In Nazareth, he made that claim that he is the spirit-filled servant that God has promised through Isaiah. He's casting out demons, cleansing lepers, putting paralyzed people back on their feet. He's taking on the Pharisees, especially about the Sabbath. And last week we heard his incredible teaching, his bold claim that his words, his teaching, are the only thing that will keep you secure when God's judgment comes. Luke is making it very clear that with Jesus, you are in the presence of greatness, of God's greatness. And in the two events that we're going to be looking at today, we see Jesus' greatness again. This time the miracle there turned up to 11, and we see how we should respond to Jesus' greatness. It's almost as if Luke is saying to Theophilus, the person or the people that he wrote this book to, it's like he's saying to Theophilus, right, here's the truth about Jesus, but it's more than just about knowing the facts. How are you going to respond? You say you love God, that's what Theophilus means. How are you going to respond to the truth and the presence of Jesus? So in the first event we look at, we see an example of responding to Jesus with humble faith. Now the focus in this story is on a centurion, a mid-level officer of the Roman army. And one of the things we need to realise about the Roman soldiers at this time is they weren't held in very high regard by the Jews. They weren't the most popular people according to the Jews. These guys were the muscle of the occupation. They were the human face and sword and shield of the enemy, of the oppressor. But this centurion was different. Even though he wasn't a Jew himself, he had great respect for the Jews and their religion and the God of Israel. Maybe he was even a convert to Judaism. Now, this centurion was based in Capernaum. Now, we've been to Capernaum previously in Luke's Gospel. It was back in chapter 4. The people from Nazareth said to Jesus, "Why don't you do the kind of miracle here that you did in Capernaum?" And we saw then the kind of miracle that Jesus did in Capernaum, casting out evil spirits and healed Peter's mother-in-law. And this centurion, he's stationed in Capernaum. And whilst he's been there, he's built a synagogue. Whether that means he made a big donation, or he helped get approval from the Roman government, or he had his soldiers actually help with the construction, we don't know, but the elders tell us that he built this synagogue. But his servant was actually a slave. The slave that we see in verse 2 that he cares deeply for, his slave is sick and on death's door. And so when Jesus comes back to town, into a town where he's got a reputation of being a healer, the centurion asks Jesus to come and heal the slave. But he doesn't go and ask Jesus himself. He sends messengers. Now, why do you reckon he did? Why doesn't he just go up and approach Jesus himself saying, "Hey, my slave's sick, can you come and heal me?" Well, in verse 6, we're told why. It's because of his humility. He knows that Jesus is someone great, and he knows that he is not deserving. It could be the Jew-Gentile thing. He knows that he's on the outside of God's people, so he doesn't deserve to go near God's Messiah. It could be because, like Peter back in chapter 5, he knows that he is a sinner. What's very interesting is the contrast between this centurion's humble view of himself, "I am not deserving," and what the elders say to Jesus. The elders, they try to manipulate Jesus. They tell him, Jesus, this fellow is really extremely deserving. They tell him how deserving this centurion is, and try to manipulate Jesus into doing the miracle. So let's read from chapter 7, verse 1, from page 1001 of those few Bibles, chapter 7, verse 1. "Now, when he concluded all his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. And a certain centurion's servant, who was dear to him, was sick and ready to die. So when he heard about Jesus, he sent elders of the Jews to him, pleading with him to come and to heal his servant. And when they came to Jesus, they begged him earnestly, saying that the one for whom he should do this was deserving, for he loves our nation and has built us a synagogue. Then Jesus went with him, and when he was already not far from the house, the centurion sent prayer to him, saying to him, 'Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy that you should enter under my roof.'" It's like weighing God, "I'm not worthy." The contrast between the centurion and the Jewish elders, it couldn't be more stark. Now make you think about how we approach God. Do we approach God with a list of our achievements, the things that make us think that we're worthy? Or do we know the real situation? We're not worthy. That everything we receive comes from God's kindness and grace. The centurion knows that he's not worthy. But another interesting thing about this centurion is that even though he knows that he's not worthy, he knows that Jesus is worthy. He has confidence in Jesus, confidence in Jesus' authority. You see that in verses 7 and 8. This centurion knows about authority. Soldiers get this. If you're in the army, the one thing that is drilled into you is authority. You follow orders. The same back then as it is today. If a higher ranking officer says jump, you don't even ask how high, you just say yes, sir. Submission to authority is drilled into you because your life and the life of your mates depends on everyone knowing the chain of command and obeying it. On the battlefield, there is no time for debate and questions. It's just, yes, sir. The centurion knows this. And he sees in Jesus the same kind of authority. That Jesus just has to say the word and stuff happens. With Jesus, it's yes, sir. And so, when he knows that Jesus is coming to his house, he's humbled by the presence of greatness, and he has faith in Jesus' authority, and so he sends out a second set of messages to tell Jesus, look, I'm not worthy, but also to tell Jesus that he trusts in his authority and power. Verse 6, then Jesus went with them, and when he was already not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying to him, Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy that you should enter under my roof. Therefore I did not even think myself worthy to come to you, but say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man placed under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes. And to another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turned around and said to the crowd that followed him, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel. And those who were sent, returning to the house, found the servant well and had been sent. Can you hear both his confidence and humility? I reckon for most of us, we don't hold those two things together. Either we only have humility, which sometimes I wonder if our humility is actually a disguise for disbelief. And so, for example, when we pray, it's like, God, if it's not too much trouble, like, I know you're busy ruling the world and everything, but would you please, like, maybe if you've got time, but deep down we don't think that there's a chance that God will do anything. Or we have an overblown sense of confidence and importance, and we just expect, of course God will listen to me, because I've worked so hard for him. I've been slaving away on the committee of management for 10 years. I'm the one who painted this church building. I've been caring for my 6,000 struggling kids. So God should just give me whatever I ask. But this Roman centurion gets it. He knows that he deserves nothing. But he also knows that Jesus is able to do anything he asks. And that's why Jesus says, I've not seen faith like this in my life. The Jewish elders that were first sent, they had confidence. It was based on what this guy had done. The centurion also had confidence and humility, but it was all based on who Jesus is. That's what faith is. Confidence and humility, it comes from what? Jesus. So that's the first way to respond to the presence of greatness, the greatness of Jesus, humble confidence. In the second event, we receive people responding to Jesus with awe at his power. This second event picks up from Jesus healing the almost dead slave, but this time he brings the fully dead man back to life. Now this event happens in a town called Nain, about 32 kilometres southwest of Nazareth. Now if you remember back a few weeks ago, when Jesus was preaching in Nazareth, back in Luke chapter 4, he talked about how the prophet Elijah had done miracles for the widow of Sidon. And one of the miracles that Elijah did was that he brought the widow's son back to life. You can read that in 1 Kings 17. And now, Jesus is down in this little town of Nain, not that far from Nazareth. Jesus does a miracle that makes the crowd who sees it say that Jesus is a prophet like Elijah. Verse 11. Now it happened the day after that he went into a city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him, and a large crowd. And when he came near the gate of the city, behold, a dead man was being carried out, the only son of his mother. And she was a widow. And a large crowd from the city was with her. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, do not weep. Then he came and touched the open coffin. And those who carried him stood still. And he said, young man, I say to you, arise. So he who was dead sat up and began to speak. What an amazing sentence. He who was dead sat up and began to speak. and he never been crucified. Then fear came upon all, and they glorified God, saying, a great prophet has risen up among us, and God has visited his people. And this report about him went throughout all Judea and all the surrounding regions. I'm not surprised that people responded in fear and awe. It would have been incredible to see that, wouldn't it? And it's no wonder that it made them think about the great prophets like Elijah and the miracles that he had done. And it's no wonder that they also started to join the dots and think, God's up to something. God's up to something. Therefore, in Jesus, before Jesus, God had said to the prophet Malachi, behold, I send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. So of course when they see someone doing things like Elijah, they think, God has visited. The day of the Lord has come. Now when they say God has visited us in verse 16, they're not saying that Jesus is Emmanuel, that God is us in that sense. It's more like the whispering in the lion, the witch and the wardrobe that Aslan is on the roof. If you know the story, this is what Mr. Beaver says to the children. It's the rumour that the great King of Narnia is coming to defeat the White Witch, that winter will be over. That's the kind of thing that these people are saying. Aslan is on the roof. But they're not huddled down and whispering it like Mr. Beaver. They're shouting it. God is up to something. He's about to help us and rescue us and deliver us. They're gasping at the greatness of God. When was the last time you gasped at the greatness of God? Sometimes it's things we see in creation that makes us gasp and we're in awe of God's grace. But it's the gospel that really should make us gasp. When we see the depths of our sin, and realize that Jesus died. That someone is wretched and is broken and is fallen and has been simply forgiven. It should make us gasp in the air. That's how the people of Nain responded in the presence of Elijah. They gasped actually at God, awed at Jesus' power. And they hadn't even seen half of it yet. How have you responded to Christ, the greatness of your mission? I mentioned it earlier, but sometimes I reckon we don't approach Jesus with the humility we should. When things go bad for us, it's hard not to think that we deserve better. Whatever it is that goes bad for us, it might be sickness, or losing a job, or bad things happening to your kids, or whatever it is. We can approach God like the elders do. We take our list of achievements and say, hey God, here's all the things I've done for you, the things that make me deserving. I deserve better. I've done my part of the deal. It's your turn now. And then we can get bitter when we don't get what we can do. But the reality is, the reality, look, that centurion really had done some good stuff. He really had done something good, but he was still unworthy. Unworthy to be in Jesus' presence. Unworthy of receiving good things of Jesus. It's all about grace and mercy. The same for us. Even if we have done the good things, we are still unworthy of God's goodness that God has shown to us in this. But then on the flip side, we don't have our more confidence in Jesus. And we might disguise doubt by making it look like humility. We doubt that God is either able or willing to answer our prayers. But you can see that Jesus has authority, even over death. He can just say a word, his slave is healed, the son is raised. We know this Jesus. We can have the humble confidence of that centurion. We can be blown away in awe by the people of Rome gasping at God. But the one thing we can't do, the thing that's impossible to do in the presence of Jesus, is to be unchanged. To just go on living the same way we always have. That's to ignore who Jesus is. That's to ignore his power and authority. It's to deny that when we meet Jesus, we are in the presence of greatness. The kind of greatness that should force us to our knees, knowing that we are not worthy, but also confident in his goodness. Father God, it is incredible that you would allow us to know you, Jesus. Like the centurion, we know that we are not worthy in you. We are not worthy to have you speak to us as you have today, Jesus. We are not worthy of the grace and kindness and blessings that you offer us in Jesus. Please help us to know that we are our unworthy servants. But also help us to have confidence to approach you, not because of our worthiness, but because Jesus is infinitely worthy. Give us confidence to approach you humbly, but confidently. And help us to grow in our awe, to know that as we meet Christ, we are in the presence of grace.